We're starting on the top of Kuf Hei Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, or going to discuss at this point, the piece in the Mishnah that said that when it was less than a Shavuputa, one was not obligated to chase after the individual until Madai. So Rav is going to come along and qualify that statement that we saw in the Mishnah. So Amar Rav Papa, Lo Shanu Elish Ein Gzela Kayemet. That which the Mishnah says that less than a Shavuputa, you don't have to return it or have to run after the person to Madai to return it. That's only if the Gzela is not Kayam, is not extant anymore, because you're returning him the monetary equivalent. So since money has static value, we know that you have an object or you have something that's worth less than a Shavuputa, so we're not going to obligate you to chase after him. But if the object itself is still here, and the way you're going to return the object is by actually giving the object to the Nigzal, then you do have to chase until Madai to return it. Why is this? Chashinan Shemet Yaker, because we are worried or we have a chashash that maybe the object's value will go up and then be above, exceed that of a Shavuputa. Again, because when you're returning money or the money equivalent of what you have stolen, then we know the exact value of what you have to return. That's static. And if it's less than a Shavuputa, we don't have to worry about it being more than a Shavuputa. On the other hand, if you're actually returning an object, that object's value is subjective, meaning it depends on when you're returning it, or when you're holding it, that it'll be worth, or what it is worth. Therefore, even though the object today is worth less than a Shavuputa, it's possible in the future that it will be worth more than a Shavuputa. So we say to you, return, or you have to chase him down to Madai in order to return it. That's the first Lishna in Rav Papa. Igad Amri, we have a second Lishna in Rav Papa. The Amar Rav Papa, Loshna Gzela Kayemet, Loshna Zein Gzela Kayemet. It doesn't matter whether the object is still around to be returned or whether you're giving him money equivalent for the object. You don't have to chase him down to Madai if it's less than a Shavuputa. Why? We don't worry or we don't consider or take into consideration the fact that maybe the object's value will increase in the future and go beyond a Shavuputa. No, we look at the situation as current or currently, whatever the situation is. If currently the situation is that it's worth less than a Shavuputa, whether it's money, which we know obviously will remain that way, or it's the object itself that's worth less than a Shavuputa, we don't make you chase him down and that will not change or will not be determined by the fact that in the future it's possible that the value could change of this object. Now we have a number of statements by Rava. Rava is going to have a couple of statements, some relevant to our Gemara, some not relevant to our Gemara, but a series of statements by Rava that have a somewhat of a similar theme to them. Amar Rava, Gazal Shalosh Agudot V'Shalosh Prutot. Person stole three piles or bundles of items that were worth three prutot. Essentially, each pile is worth one pruta. V'huzlu, and then they went down in value. V'amdu Ashtayim, and now they're only worth two prutot. So now he can return the objects to the Baalim, because they are Shalcha L'Fanecha. But what does he do? Imichzir Lo Shtayim. He only returns two of them, Chayav Lachzir Lo Acheret. He does return still the third object. So why is this? What's going on here? So essentially, when he stole it, he had objects that were worth three objects. Each object was worth a Shavit Pruta. Now, when after he is stolen it, the value has gone down, but he still has the objects. Since he has the objects, he can return them the way they are, and he hands them back to the Baalim. When he hands them back to the Baalim, they are worth less. Now they're worth only two prutot. So, for instance, if he was to return two out of the three objects, whatever remains of the third object is worth less than a Shavuputa. So I would think, okay, if he returned two, the third one he doesn't have an obligation to return. Rav says, no, that's not the case. He must also return the third object. V'tani Tuna, we have a brisa that supports this position. Why? Gazal chametz varvavav pesach. Someone who steals chametz and then pesach comes by, meaning that it was in violation. The chametz was owned in violation of abay yirah abay yometzeh. Therefore, it's asur. Now it's asur to be used. So the gazlan is still allowed to return it to the nigzav. He can say, "Here's your chametz back. Take it. It's still here. It looks the same. I'm returning you your chametz." So that's only if the chametz is still extant, is still around, can he hand them back the chametz itself. If it's not available to return, then what does he have to do? He has to give him the monetary equivalent, the money value of it. Even though currently this chametz is worthless. This chametz is worthless, and he can hand them this worthless object, and be yotzei the din of hashava, returning the gzela. Nevertheless, if he does not have the chametz, he does not have the object, he still has to pay real money. He has to return him the monetary value of the chametz. Kaven to be karamamonahu. And by the shlume. Right, since originally it was worth, it had monetary value, therefore what he has to give back now is something of monetary value. Achanami, in our case too. Avagav da hashalo shavei pruta, even though currently it's not worth the shavei pruta, because you have three objects that are worth two prutot, that by definition each one is worth less than a pruta. Nevertheless, given to me, karavi shavei pruta, in the beginning when he stole it, each object was worth a single pruta. Vayishlume, therefore he has to return or he has to pay it. So the principle that comes out from here, or the principle that Rava is establishing, is that even though we had a principle earlier in the Gemara of shinoi koneh, that when a gazlan steals something and he does some sort of shinoi, or if the object is no longer around, that he has to pay kishat gzela. He pays at the time of the gzela, at the time of the shinoi, he pays for the value of the object. But in a case where the object is still around, we didn't have this principle of paying kishat gzela because he could just return the object. So you would think when he returned the object, all determinations of value would be at the time or at the moment that he is returning it. As the Rebbe comes to say, no, that the valuation determination is done at the time that he stole it. And therefore the obligation to return it, or the obligation of being, or the determination that it's above a shavu pruta, will be decided or determined by the moment that he stole it. And his proof is from chametz. By chametz, even though now it's worthless, he still has to pay money, he has to pay full value for the object, even though it's worthless now, because at the time he stole it, it was worth something, so too over here. Even though right now the object is worth less than a shavu pruta, when he stole it, it was worth a pruta. If it was worth a pruta when he stole it, now he still has an obligation now, when it's worth less than a pruta, to return the object. So by Rava asks a question, Gazal shtei agudot bepruta. He stole two bundles or two piles that are worth a single pruta. Essentially, each pile being worth half a pruta. Ve'gzir lo achat mehen. And he returns one of the two piles. Mahu, what's the din? Mi amrina, what do we say now? Hashta leka gazela gabe. Right now he has no gzail in his hand. Why doesn't he have gzail in his hand? Because whatever he has remaining of the other individual's property is worth less than a pruta. So whatever he has left is worth less than a pruta. He no longer has stolen materials in his hands. O Dilma Hadlo Hatar Gzela Dhabi Gabe. Or maybe he did not return all of the stolen item that is with him. So we have two tzadim here. One side is to say that, or how we view the obligation to return, is it that I have to have gzela in my possession? If I have gzela in possession, I'm obligated to return it. But if there is no gzela in my possession, then I'm not obligated to return it. So, for instance, in this case, where he returned half of it, and what's left in his hand is worth less than a shavu pruta, then he no longer has what's qualified or as the gzela. So, if he doesn't have a gzela, then there's an obligation to return it. Or, do we formulate it this way, that hashava is only accomplished when you return all that which you have stolen. And since you haven't returned all that which you have stolen, you still have an obligation to return the remaining item, or to fulfill the full hashava. Hadar pashta, he answered the question afterwards, gzela inkan, hashava inkan. There is no gzela, and there is no hashava. There is no returning. Mara says, wait a minute, you can't have these, like, this is mutually exclusive. How could you make a statement if there is no gzela? Then obviously he returned the object. If he didn't return the object, there is gzela. How could you have that both be that he does not have a stolen item in his hands, and he didn't return it? So Mara says, e gzela inkan, if there is no gzela here, hashava yeshkan, then he did return the object. If he doesn't have gzela in his possession, it must be by definition that he returned it. Mara says, no, achi gamar. Despite the fact that he is not in possession of stolen items now, why? Because it's less than a shavu pruta. Nevertheless, mitzvah hashava inkan, he has no ability, he did not return the object. Meaning that the first half of pruta that he returned to the nigzal does not accomplish the mitzvah hashava. He did not return the item. So despite the fact that he's no longer in possession of quote-unquote gzela, because he has less than a shavu pruta, nevertheless he has not accomplished the mitzvah hashava, because he still has that which remains in his hand, and that half pruta that he gave him originally did not accomplish hashava. And in order to accomplish the full hashava, the full returning, he must return the remainder of the item that he stole, even though he's not in possession of any gzela. And possibly, he may not be able to accomplish hashava, since he's not in possession of gzela. You only accomplish hashava if he's v'yeshivet gzela asher gazal. So he might have failed on both counts. He might not have any stolen possession, but he may never be able to accomplish the mitzvah of hashava. So now the Gemara continues, V'amar Rava. We have a similar case from Rava in the Dinim of Nazir. Hari Amru. Right, they say about a Nazir, we have heard from him, it's not a statement of Rava, but rather he's quoting something that we know, Nazir Shigileach, Nazir that shaved his head at the end of his time of being a Nazir, he must shave his head in order to proceed through the process of completing the Nazirut. So if he shaved his head, Vishier Shtesh Sa'arot, when he shaved off his head, he left two hairs. Two hairs is the shi'ur for the amount of hair that must be shaved. It's also the shi'ur for if that much hair remains, that you have not accomplished of shaving one's head. So if one shaves off the head and leaps to Sarot, lo asav lo klum, he did nothing. Nothing has happened, he has accomplished absolutely nothing. So bai rava, gilech achat, minisha achat, mahu. That if he shaves one of these hairs off, and then one of them falls out, what is the din? So what are we trying to find out here? So Tosu says, one of two possibilities. There are two opinions in Gemara Nazir. Either one possibility, is this considered a giluach, so that he'll be mutar l'metameh l'metim, and to drink wine means to accomplish the completion of his Nazir process. Or, according to the other opinion, where the giluach is not ma'akev, has he accomplished the mitzvah of giluach over here? So Amar le Rav Acha midifti the Ravina. Nazir shigileach achat kami baile the Rava? Rava is wondering if a Nazir shaves off one hair at a time, whether that accomplishes giluach. What do we mean over here? Meaning that what happens when a person shaves his head? So it's fine. Normally, you shave off numerous hairs at a time, and he shaves off the entire hair. That's he accomplishes giluach. What happens if a person went ahead and shaved hair by hair on his head? Is that accomplished giluach? Of course. Why, one at a time? So all Rava said now was that he shaved his whole head, leftovers to Sarot. Then to accomplish or to finish the process of giluach, he shaves off the last hair. And then the last one falls out, one hair remaining that falls out, that's irrelevant because he's already accomplished giluach by shaving each hair individually, independently. So what's Rava's question? No, this is what Rava's question is. No, it happened in the reverse order, meaning that he shaved his head to the point where there were two se'arot left over. So he shaved his head when there were two se'arot left over, then he hasn't accomplished the shaving. Now, he's left with these two hairs and he wants to shave them off. In order to accomplish the shaving of his head, he must remove these two hairs. But had he shaved the first hair and then there was one left, that would have been like a full shaving, be the continuation of the original cutting. But now, what happens? One of them falls out. So all that remains is a single hair. Now, when a single hair remains, if he shaves that hair, is that accomplished shaving? Because there are no longer two sarot left. Or on the other hand, has he done nothing? Because all he's shaving is one hair that's left over. Mi'amrin, hashta mihat haleka shi'ur. Do we say now there is no longer two hairs left? And there are no two hairs left, then he shaved his head, because there's nothing that's ma'akev here. Oh, Dilmar, maybe we say, halav giluachu. There is no giluach, there is no shaving here. Why? Because each of the two situations, neither of them accomplish giluach. Dimi kara, haisher, shtei sarot. The original cutting left over two sarot, and when left over two sarot, that means that he never shaved his head. V'hashta, now when he came to shave the last two, which is that he needs to shave a shi'ur of two sarot to accomplish shaving, kigileach lovi be sarot. When he shaved it, he only shaved one hair, because one of them fell out, so whatever he shaved, the remaining thing that he shaved was not two sarot, so he accomplished no giluach on either side here. Hadar Pashta, afterwards he himself answered the question, and he gives a similar answer to what we saw before. Se'er Einkan, Giluach Einkan. There is no hair here, there is no shaving here. So again, the Gemara is going to ask the simple, they're mutually exclusive. If there is no hair here, then he accomplished Giluach, then he shaved his head. And if he didn't shave his head, then there must be Se'er left, there must be hair left. How could it be? The Gemara says, Se'er Einkan. If there's no hair here, then obviously Giluach Yeshkan, then he did shave his head. No, it says Achikamar, the similar formulations that we saw before with the Gneva. Alpha pieces say are Einkan, even though there is no hair over here. Mitzvat Giluach Einkan. So despite the fact that he has no Se'ar, it's true. There is no Se'ar here. And he can no longer accomplish the mitzvah of Giluach because he has no hair. Meaning that he did what he was supposed to do technically, which is remove all his hair. But despite the fact that there is no hair here, he did not accomplish that through Giluach. He did not accomplish that through shaving. And therefore he did not have to either accomplish the mitzvah of Giluach on one hand, or the other possibility is that he is now, it's ma'akev for him that he may not drink wine or mitame l'metim, because he has not shaved his head. Why has he not shaved his head? Because in the first case, when he shaved his head and left over two sarot, that's not a giluach. And then in the end, when he came to do another shaving, he wanted to shave those remaining two hairs, since one of them fell out, whatever he shaved one hair. Well, shaving one hair is not called giluach. The Amar Rava. So we now have another case by Rava. Hari Amru. We have a statement, we have a principle. Chavit shenigva. If you have a barrel or a pitcher that has a hole in it, visat muash marim, hitzilua. And then the sediment that's in the barrel plugs the hole, hitzilua, it saves it. So now, what is the case over here? Rashi says that the case over here is where you have a house that has a skylight in it. Now, the house with the skylight in it allows tuma, or tumat oil that's found in the lower house, to reach the aliyah, to reach the upper part of the house. So what happens if there is a barrel or a pitcher that's sitting in that hole that is blocking the tuma from rising up into the upper part of the house until the aliyah. So if the kli is a kli tahor, it could prevent the tuma from moving up atop. Whereas if it is a kli that is tameh or can become tameh, then it will not. Then it will allow the tuma to pass. So over here, we want to know that when the shmarim plug the hole in the kli, does that prevent the kli from allowing tuma to enter it and become tameh? If it prevents the tuma from entering and becoming tameh, that means that the kli is tahor. So is this plug of the sediment, does that retain or allow the kli to retain its shame kli and prevent it from coming to tameh or not? And this is what Rav is quoting. Yes, it does. So it says that he disagrees with Rashi, because first of all, this mishnah is found in kelim, is not found in aholot. And as Rashi is talking about, is it did in aholot. So what is the case here? The case here is a principle that we have by tumat olav, a tzamid patil. That a kli cheres, when you're talking about earthenware vessels, if they are totally sealed or totally encased, they will not be mekabel tuma and tumat olav. So here you have a kli that was totally encompassed or sealed, and therefore was not mekabel tuma. But yet, there was a hole in it, a hole of a konis mashke. When you have a hole of a konis mashke, that would invalidate the kli from being a kli. If it invalidates the kli from being a kli, then the tuma could enter and be metameh the things that are inside. But despite that it had as a hole, all of a sudden it was plugged by the shmarim, it was plugged by the sediment. Is the plugging by the sediment sufficient to have it retain shame kli and be considered tamid patil, to consider that it's totally encompassed and it will not be mekabel tuma in the ohel? So either way, according to Rashi or Tosfot, the question is the shmarim, that we say, or what we do say, is that the shmarim prevent the kli from becoming tameh, or prevent the objects inside from coming tameh. According to Tosfos, that's the whole question here. It's tamid patil, whether the stuff inside is protected, and the shmarim do plug the hole in order to protect the stuff inside. According to Rashi, the shmarim protect the kli, so the stuff inside, or the kli itself, does not become tameh. If the kli inside does not become tameh, then it does protect against the tumah moving from the lower part of the house to the upper part of the house through the aruba. So now Bari Rava says, agaf chetzia mau. What happens if he patches half the hole? I mean, the hole was big enough to invalidate it from becoming a kli. But what does he do? He doesn't go back and patch the entire hole. He patches half of the hole. So by patching half the hole, does he accomplish the equivalent of what the shmarim would do is plugging up the hole? So Amar Leih Rav Yehi, Rav Ashi, Lav Mishnah Tenuhi. Isn't this a mishnah that we know from Kelim that's not? Chavit shenigva v'satmua shmarim, it's ilua. That a chavit that had a hole in it, and then it was plugged up by the sediment, it saves it. Pakaka bizmura, if he plugged it with a branch, he plugged the hole with a branch, ad shimereach, it does not accomplish the plugging in the hole until he seals it in, he plasters it in until he seals in the branch so it won't come out anymore. Hayu bashtayim, if he required two branches to fill in the hole, he has to plaster around it, or he has to seal it around the outsides of the branches. Between the two branches themselves, he must plaster between them. The only reason that the patching works here is because he plastered it up. Had he not plastered it up, even though the branches fill in half of the hole, nevertheless, that's not considered a plug. So halo mireach, lo, it would not work if he had not sealed it. So it seems to need, you need a total seal in order to reverse the process of there being a hole there. Amai, it should be the same or the equivalent of him patching up half of a hole. Zimrei, no. Hachi ashto, the cases aren't comparable. Hotam ilo mireach lokoi egev lokoi. If he does not plaster or seal in the branches, they're going to fall out by themselves. They're not a plug that's a permanent plug. They're just a loose piece of branches there. The reason he needs to seal them is to hold them in place. Agav chetzia b'midah dekoi koi. When he plugs half the hole, wherever he plugged, there's a permanent plug and a plug that will withstand the test of time. So over there, maybe it will work, meaning that you can't prove anything from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is discussing Esav Zmora. Zmora is not, right, does not have the ability to stand on its own as a plug, and therefore, even though he put in the branches and it looks like he plugged half the hole, there's no plug here at all, because they'll fall out. On the other hand, when he plugs it properly, and he plasters in half of it, or he locks in half, he refurbishes half of it, he makes a plug for half of the hole, or really that, whatever he did is going to be permanent. And when he did that and it's going to be permanent, maybe that should be sufficient in order to prevent the tuma from coming in. V'amar Rava, we have an additional statement by Rava Hari Amru, Gazal Chametz, that we have the principle that someone who steals Chametz, Varvala V'Pesach, and then it was in violation of Bayre V'Matzei, nevertheless, he can say, Hari Shalcha L'Fanecha, the Gazlan can return it to the Gazal and say, this belongs to you, it's yours. So by Rav Raya asked the question, Nishba Alav Mahu, if he takes a Shvu'ah with regards to it, regards to this Chametz, what is the din? So we know we have a principle that a person who denies, who takes a Shvu'ah denying that he owes money to somebody, then he, and afterwards he admits to the fact that he lied, that he took a Shvu'ah falsely, then he must return the object to the individual, pay an additional Chomesh, and bring an Hashem Gzeilot. So in this case over here, what happens if a person has this Chametz in his possession and he denies having it? Does this Chametz have monetary value? So therefore, when he takes a Shvu'ah and denies having it, then he'll be in violation of Mishvat HaPikadon, and he will have to, Mishvat HaGzeilot, and he'll have to go and pay a Karen Chomesh and Hashem Gzeilot. Or we say, no, since the Chomesh has no monetary value, it's worthless, then his denial over here, or his Shvu'ah, is about something that has no monetary value. Mir minanti imignav vayishlumele mimona kakafele. Since if it was stolen from him, he would have to repay it. He'd have to pay real money to replace the Chomesh if it was stolen from him. Mimona kakafele. So then when he's in denial, or he makes a denial about this object, then there is mimona, and it's real money that we're dealing with here. Odilma hashta mihat Hamanach, right, over here, nevertheless, what we have right in front of us right now is a piece of chametz that is worthless, v'afer ba'amo, and it's just dust of the earth, v'lo kafer le'mimona, right, so that is not worth, it has no monetary value. So what do? We look at the chametz now, where it's sitting in front of us, which is that it has zero monetary value, and therefore when it's denial, when it takes a shvu'ah on this, then that shvu'ah is not about a denial of money, because there is no money over here. On the other hand, do we say, no, if this object is not returned, if he does not return the object, he will have to pay full money. It has real monetary value because it's replacing his need to repay this nigzal. And therefore, it has monetary value, and his denial of taking a shvu'ah will bring him into the parsha of Shvu'at HaPikadon. So when it says, Milta di Baile, the Rava pshita the Rabbo, that which Rava had a question about, Rabbo, and knew, or had a simple answer to this. Amar Rabba, Shari Ganafta, a person comes along and says that you stole my shore. V'omer lo ganafti, and the other person denies it and says, I did not. So, my tivo etzlecha, he says to him, what's it doing with you? Meaning that, explain to me, fine, you say you didn't steal the shore. Why do you have the shore? So he says, Shomer Chinam ani olav, I was given it to watch. It's a pikadon with me. I was given it to watch as a Shomer Chinam. Chayav, in that case, that denial makes him chayav. Why? Shari patar etzmo migneva aveda. Because by saying there's a Shomer Chinam now, he accomplishes the fact that if it was stolen or lost after this point in time, he would be patur. Shomer Sacharani, or he can answer that I was a Shomer Sachar, that I was a hired watchman to watch this pikadon. Right, then he's chayav additional. Why? Shari patar etzmo mishra meita. Because the Shomer Sachar is still patur miones. Since he was poter himself from ones, that also gives him some value. Shuel ani alav, if he says that I'm a borrower, that I borrowed the item from you, chayav, again he's chayav, sharei patar atzmo mimeita machmat malacha, because a shuel is patur if the animal dies while it is doing work, or if the weakness, it's also patur from any weakness that comes along for doing the work. Alma, from this we can see, afgav da hakayim, right, that the object is right in front of us, and right now, his claim did not make, or does not have any monetary value, right? The object is here. He's basically saying that the object does belong to you. You come along, you say, you stole it from me. The Nigzal says, you stole it from me. And the Gazlan says, you know what? I didn't steal it from you, but it is your object. So he's not denying anything from the standpoint that he's going to have to return this object to the individual. Nevertheless, what does Rabba say? Rabba says that he's chayav. He's chayav. If he's modeh afterwards that he stole it, he's chayav to him, Karen Chomesh and Hashem Gzeilot. Why should he be chayav? He didn't deny or create for himself any monetary value. Rabbi says that's not true. He did create for himself some monetary value. What is the monetary value that he created for himself? Is that in the future, if something happens to this animal, then he would be protected from certain possible outcomes. For instance, right, the imignav, mamonika kafar. If it was stolen from him, then a shomer chinam would not have to pay for it. So he's protecting himself from some monetary outlay. Meaning that if he was a gazlan, he'd be chayab to replace the animal if it was stolen from him. On the other hand, if he's a shomer chinam, he's patur if it's stolen from him. So he did something. He put himself into a position that has future monetary value. Ashton namami, mamonika kafar. Right, also over here. When at this moment, at this present moment, he's therefore making a denial of monetary value. Achnami bar case of the chametz, so too. Afagav the afra ba'almahu, despite the fact that currently it's a worthless item, it's a piece of chametz. Nevertheless, kaven de imigna vayishlumele mamona, if it was stolen from him, he will have to replace this item with full monetary payment. Hashanami monika kafrele, so too over here. At this moment, when he takes the shvu'ah, that he is denying that he has the object, then he's making a denial about money. Meaning that, as opposed to what we saw before with Rava, that we saw this before by Rava, that the determination is based on the past, meaning that when we look at the monetary value of the object, whether you have an obligation to return it or not return it, that is based on the object's value at the time that it was stolen. Over here we're saying now the object is valueless. Despite the fact the object is valueless, it has future value. It has future value from the perspective that either the object can be returned, harishol fanecha by chametz, or the claim that you make, for instance, by saying that you're a shomer chinam and not a gazlan, that gives you value in the future because if the object is stolen, it will protect you. So that future value or that ability in the future to replace monetary value gives the object currently monetary value, and if it has monetary value currently, that means that if you take a shvu'ah of denial on it, then you're going to be chayav, keren, chomesh, and asham gzelot. So that's Rabba's position. Rabba, I left it as a question, but Rabba, it's clear from Rabba that he believes that it does have monetary value. Rata yativ Rabba, so the girsa, the Bach changes the girsa here to Rabba, v'kamar l'hayshmaitata, he said over this whole position here, and he said to, and then Rav Avram, eitve Rav Avram, Rambam came and asked the question, obviously, to the Rabbah. He asked the question to the Rabbah. V'kicheish ba. The pasuk says that he denied it. Prat l'modeh b'ikar. That excludes someone who admits that he actually has the object in his possession. Meaning that, in our case, ketzat. What's the case? How's the case? How could it be possible that you're denying having the object, yet you're still admitting that you have the object? What's the case? Shari ganavta. Then he says, you stole my shor. Romer lo ganavti. I didn't steal it. So then he says, Mativa tzuchad, and exalts as a gazlan, so why do you have this shore? So he says, no problem. Atama chartoli, you sold it to me. Atana tatoli, you gave it to me. Bimatana, it's a gift. Avicha macholi, your father sold it to me. Avicha natoli bimatana, or your father gave it to me as a gift. Achar parati rats me'elav, it ran after my flock. It was running after my paran, came into our flock by itself. Baitzli. It ran after my par, or it came by itself to me. To'eh baderech matzativ, I found it. It was wandering on the street, and I found it. Shomer chinam ani alav, I was a shomer chinam for it. Shomer sachar ani alav, it's a pikadon by me. I'm either a shomer chinam or shomer sachar. Shoel ani alav, or I borrowed it. V'nishba, he takes the shuav, and then he admits it. Yochol yei chayav, you would think it would be chayav in all these cases because he denied the fact that he stole it. Tamlor kichish ba. That only a denial, a full denial, makes you chayav. Pratamo debikar. This excludes someone who admits to the fact that it's in his possession, that it belongs to the original owner. So in all these claims over here, even though he's denying that he stole it, he's still admitting that it belongs to the true owner, to the nigzal over here. Since he's admitting that it belongs to the nigzal, right, then he hasn't been kichesh by it. It's not a full denial. It's not a proper denial. Denial means that I didn't steal it, but I didn't steal it, and it's not yours. That's not what's happening over here. So this goes against what Rabba just established before. Rabba says that is considered a denial. Because I am changing the circumstances which will give me monetary protection in the future, that is a denial of a monetary obligation. And that would make me chayav for Karen Chomesh and Hashem Zilot, yet we have a brisa that says the opposite. Amalei Tadura. As he says, you missing a heart, or Shumam, someone who doesn't know what he's talking about, bored, whatever, you don't know what you're saying here. So Rabba's response to Rav Amram, Kitanya, the case where it's brought down in the Braisa, the Kamerle Helech. In that case of the Braisa, he says, take your object back. He denies that he stole it. He says that I have it in my possession because of some other circumstance, but then he says, take it, it's yours, have it back. So now the object's been returned to the Nigzal. Kika Mina, what I'm talking about, Rabbi says, my case is the Kaima Bagam, that it's still sitting in the swamp. It's not in the possession of the Nigzal. It hasn't been returned to the Nigzal. Right? So when he didn't return it to Nigzal yet, then there is a denial of money because something could happen to the item. If something happens to the item, there is a monetary benefit to him saying that he's not a Gazlan, but rather he is one of these other cases of coming into possession of the item. So Rabbi says, you're mixing up my case and the case of the Braisa. Even though they sound exactly the same, they're actually two different circumstances. Circumstance in the Braisa is where he actually returned the object. In my circumstance, he didn't return the object, and therefore there is benefit going into the future that if something happens to the object before it is returned, that there will be monetary value. Now, Gemara had questions. I skipped over. I glazed over at the time. But there were a number of cases of the Braisa brought down which suggested that he came into possession of it, but still belongs to the original owner. Well, Atama Chartoli, you sold it to me. What do you mean? If he sold it, if you make a claim that he sold it to you, that means that the gazlan believes that it's his. He says, no, I didn't steal it, I bought it. But either way, it's in possession of the gazlan now, it doesn't belong to the exile. So how could you call that shelo kafar bikar, that he did not, right, that he did not deny, or he's not denying that the core object belongs to the exile? He is saying that here. So my modeh bikar, what's the case of modeh bikar here? What does it mean that he admitted that he owes the exile owns it? Ika, lo, tzricha, no, the case here, what's the case here? Damalei luna tati lecha dmei, I didn't pay for it. Shakul torach vizil, I didn't pay for it. You're right, you sold it to me, but I never paid for it. I did not steal it, you sold it to me, but I didn't pay for it. Take your shore back, take it back, it's yours, because I didn't pay for it. So now, atana tatali, so now we have a whole bunch of other cases like this, where it comes into possession of the gazlan, and he's not claiming, or he's not, the claim that he makes doesn't put it back into the possession of the exile. First of all, you gave it to me. Avicha natnoldi, your father gave it to me. Ma mode biikar. Over here, what does it mean that he's mode biikar over here, that he agrees that it really belongs to the exile? He's not saying that. He says it belongs to me. Ika, damar. What type of mode biikar is there here? Damalei, amnat davina lecha naich naf denafsha. You gave me these objects, or your father gave me these objects, on the condition that I do something good for you, that I take care of you in some way. And I never did that. So I owe you the money for it, or I really owe you the animal back. Shakul torach vizil. Take your animal back, and it's yours. I mean, that Enoch Hanami, his claim really is a claim that it does not belong to an exile, but because the claim involves some other factor, either that he owes him the money, or that he was supposed to do something, and since he didn't do it, he's basically saying, take your animal back, take your object back, take the item back. In that case, he's admitting to the fact that it really belongs to the exile. So, todeh b'derech mitzativ. So, if he found it lost on the way, and he says that I found that it was wandering around and it was lost. Lema ibaylach ladurili. Why doesn't he say to him, you should have returned to me until now? I mean, you're a gazlan, not because you stole it originally. You deny that you stole it originally. Okay, we'll agree with you. You found it wandering around, and then you took it into your possession to return to you. Well, if you took it into your possession to return to me, and you know it belongs to me, and then you didn't return it to me, you're a gazlan because you kept the aveda. So fine, you didn't steal it originally, but now you're a gazlan because you kept it, even though you knew you could return it. So I'm going to avoid the shmo, but omer shvua aveda. Matati v'yeti yodea shishocha. Took a shvua. He says that I found something that was lost, but I had no idea that it was yours. Shechzerinalach, to give it back to you. So that's what the case is over here. He took a shvua. He was in denial. He wasn't in denial that it was an aveda, that it didn't belong to him. He was just in denial of the fact that he had to give it. Shechzerinalach, that I knew who to give it back, that it belonged to you. He admits to the fact that the object does not belong to him, but nevertheless, he says, or his denial is the fact that he knew who it really belonged to, even though he did do it. So that denial does not create the monetary obligation, because he's willing to return the item, and he hands the item back to the right. He says, hey, lech, take your short back. Tanya, we have a brisa. Amar ben Azai, gimel shvuotin. There are three types of shvuot over here. So if you look at Rashi, what are we talking about? Shlo shvuot here. This is talking about be'idut aveda, that he, an aid. Someone comes along, this is called Shvuat Eidut, he takes an aid or a witness to some item. It says to this aid, take a Shvuah that you know nothing about this case, and the aid takes a Shvuah. So he denies that he has any knowledge of what transpired over here. So yeah, there are three different cases of where he denies it. He says, Hikir ba v'lo b'motah. He denies anything about it, but the truth is that he knew about it, but not who found it. Or b'motah v'lo ba, or he knew who found it, but he didn't know about it, who it really belonged to. V'lo ba, v'lo motza. He didn't know anything about the object, or he didn't know who took it, or who found it. So the guy says, v'lo ba, v'lo motza. If he doesn't know who took the object, and he doesn't know who the object belongs to, then he's telling the truth. He didn't know anything about this case. Somebody says, no, kushta ishtaba. In that case, he's taking a true shvua. The aim of ba, u, b'motza. He knew about both items. So here in this case, the aid is taking a shvua, denying that he has knowledge of a case. In each of the, there are three different cases where he denies knowledge of the case. One denial is that he doesn't know anything about the, he doesn't know anything, his denial is that he knows nothing about it, but he truthfully does know about it, and who found the aveda. That's one possibility. Or he denies knowing anything about it, and he knows who found the aveda, but he just doesn't know who it belongs to. Or number three, the case is that he denies knowing anything, and truthfully he knows who found the Aveda, but he doesn't know who the Aveda belongs to. The third case is that he knows about the Aveda, who the Aveda belongs to, but he just doesn't know who found it. So what's this position? Menazeh is talking about these three different types of Shvuat Eidut. What is the outcome or what's the meaning of this? So Rabbi Rav Ami Amar Rav China Liftor, to tell him that he's patur. In this case, he's patur from the chiyuv of Shvat Eidut. Shmuel Amar Lechiyuv, no, to tell you that you're chayav in all these instances. And this is similar to another machloket tanaim that we have, the Tanya. We have a braisa, mashbia ed echad patur. Someone who forces an ed echad to take a shvua, denying that he has any knowledge of a case, and then we find out that he really does have knowledge of the case, in that instance he is patur. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon Machayev, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon says he is chayav. But Micah Miflege, what are they arguing about? Marsa Radavar Agurim Lamamon, Kimamon Dami. Right, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon believes since this could accomplish or could have the impact of having monetary value, then you're equivalent to making a denial, a monetary denial here. Since you made a monetary denial, you're chayav for Shvat Eidut. So this Eid Echad was an Eid Echad accomplished in a monetary case. In a monetary case, the Eid Echad accomplishes that he forces the other party to take a Shvu'ah. So now there are different outcomes. One outcome is that he could take the Shvu'ah, or the other outcome is that he could say, oh, I'm not going to take a Shvu'ah, I'm going to pay you. So there could be some monetary benefit from the fact that this Eid Echad shows up and creates or forces a Shvu'ah over here. So a Shvu'ah could be a Goreim Lamamon. So the Eid Echad is a Goreim Lamamon. So now when he denies knowing anything about the case, has he made a denial about something that could have had monetary implications? Well, as Rabbi Shimon says, yes, this is a Dabar Goreim Lamamon, Kim Mamon Dami, Umar Savar, right? On the other hand, the Tanakhama believes, Lavke Mamon Dami, it's not like Mamon. Therefore, when the Eid Echad comes, there's no guarantee that there would be any outcome, monetary outcome here. Since there's no guarantee, what he denied of saying anything or knowing anything about the case is not a monetary denial, not a denial that has monetary impact. And therefore, he would not be Chayab Shvat Eidut. So similarly, in our case over here, when the Avedah, when he denies knowing anything about, he's an aid about what happens when he denies knowing anything about the Avedah, that doesn't mean necessarily that the individual, the knowledge that he had, doesn't necessarily mean the individual will get his lost item back. Because even if he knew who took it into his house, and that the Avedah belonged to this individual, he knew all the information, that doesn't guarantee that the individual will get his object, the stolen object, the lost object back, because he can go now to the person who is watching the Avedah and say, listen, you have my object. He say, you know what? It's lost. Or something happened to it. It was lost afterwards. It was stolen afterwards. So the fact that there's no guarantee that he'll get his Aveda back means that it's only a Goreim Lamamon. This aid here who has knowledge about the case, his knowledge is not a guarantee that we'll get the object back. His knowledge is just a possibility that we'll get the money back or the object back. If it's only a possibility, then it becomes a Goreim Lamamon. If it's a Goreim Lamamon, then that will rely or will be subject to the same machlokas we have by the Braisa, whether Goreim Lamamon is Kamamon Dami. And therefore, Rav Ami and Rav Chanina believe that Goreim Lamamon is Lav Kamamon Dami, and therefore you're Patur and all these denials by the case of Eidah. Ushmuel Amar Lechiyuv, like Rav Elazar Rav Shimon, that a Goreim Lamamon is Kamamon Dami. If it's like Mamon, then his denial is a monetary denial. Okay, Amar Rav Sheshet. Rav Sheshet made a statement. A Kofer Bepikadon, someone who denies having a Pikadon, Naseh Lav Gazlan. When you deny having a pikadon, someone gave you something to watch. If you deny having a possession, you become from that moment forward, you become a gazlan, you become a thief, v'chayav onsin, and you become chayav onsin. You've lost your title as a shomer. Therefore, you don't have all the protections of being a shomer, and you become a gazlan from that point forward. V'tani tuna, and we have a braisa that supports this position. It says v'ki cheshba, he denies. Right, this is the Shvu'at Pikadon. He denies having the Pikadon. The Manu Unish, we know about the punishment. What's the punishment? He has to bring a Karen. He has to give the Karen back, plus a Chomesh, plus bring an Asham Gzelot. Azhara Minayim, where is the warning for this? Where do we have an Azhara to tell us that this is the Onish that you get? Tamal Omar, Lo Techachashu. You should not be in denial. Do not deny. My love, Lo Onish Mamon. What are we talking about here? We're talking about the monetary punishment. Right, so we're talking about the monetary punishment, meaning that if, not in a case of shvua, not in a case where he took a shvua and then he became chaya, but just a denial, a simple denial of owing money. And then we find out later that you do owe the money. So that's what we're talking about here, the onesh and hazara. Where do we know that there's a punishment and hazara and a warning about the fact that if you deny money, that you become responsible to return that money? Where it says, no, the onesh shvua. No, we're talking about a shvua here. This is a case where he took a shvua, denying that he had it. And afterwards, he admits that he was lying. When he admits afterwards, then we have a punishment. The punishment, again, is Karen Chomesh Vesham Gzilot, the Karvan, basically. And then we say to him, you got to pay for it. So how do we know it's Hara for that? And where it says, Amiktani Seifo, there's a second half to this Brisa. The Brisa says, right, in the second half of the Brisa says, Dishtaba, right? Dishtaba, that he took a shvua, michlau, the ratio of the lo ishtaba. Second half of the Brisa talks a case where he did take a shvua. So the second case in the Brisa is a case where he did take a shvua, then the first case of the Brisa must be where he didn't take a shvua. If he didn't take a shvua, that supports the position of Rav Sheshet, then when you deny having to owe something to somebody, then you become a gazlana, you become obligated in being you become a gazlana to the point that you're obligated for all problems that arise after that point in time. It's in the Sefer, it's the ishtaba, michlau, the ratio of the lo ishtaba. The tiny sefer. What's the case in sefer? V'nishbal sheker. He denied it by lying and saying that he took a shvuah that he didn't owe him anything. L'manu onish. We know about the onish. As harim minayim. We know the warning from it. Tamalomer lo tishakru. You're not allowed to lie. You're not allowed to take a shvuah l'sheker. Umid sefer dishtaba. Reisha delo ishtaba. It's clear that the sefer is not a case of shvuah. Then the first case has to be a different case. That must be a case where he did not take a shvuah. Where it says imi idvide dishtaba. No, both cases are cases where he took a shvuah. Kanshodeh. There are different ways. Once he's taken a shvua, denying the fact that he has the stolen item in his possession, there are two ways afterwards for him to become chayav. One way for him to become chayav is Adim show up and say, you really did steal it. The other way for him to come to chayav, to become chayav, is if he admits to the fact that he stole it. Right, so, atu Adim, if Adim come, chayav the onsin. If the Adim come, he's chayav and otsim, because he's a gazlan. And if he's a gazlan and Adim come, he's got to pay back. All he has to pay back is the Karen, but he's Chayav Ronsin. Ad Udi Odi, Chayav Karen Chomash Vasham. Right? If he stole it and he admits to having stolen and taken the Shvuah Sheker, then he owes him the Karen, the Chomash, and the Sham Gzilot. So the punishments or the outcomes are different depending on how he's found out to be a gazlan. If he's found out through his own word or through his own admission, then he's Chayav Karen Chomash and the Sham Gzilot. So that's one of the cases, the ratio case in the Mishnah, where it's looking for an explanation in that denial. And that denial, it says, what's the onish? We know the onish is the karban. What's the warning for that? Lo techahashu. Then the other case is where he steals it, and then Adim come and testify that, and he took a shvua that he didn't steal it, and then Adim come and say that you did steal it. So in that case, what's the onish? The onish is now he's chayav in onsin. He's responsible for the object. He's got to repay the object, and he's responsible for the object. Now, so for that, what's the azhara? The azhara for that case or that incident, that possibility is lo techahashu, that you should not lie. You should not take shvuot l'sheker. Okay, we'll stop over here.